This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details. The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Every time. It's like panic alert. There's a woman. She's going to talk about women. Ah, help. Yep, Lucy Porter, that is me. I am that woman. I have an amazing woman who's going to come and... Well, she's here. But she's just not there. She's mmming. Who's going to come and talk to us? And let's kick off without further ado. Our record of the week, which is sort of following on from Zoe Lyons last week, was talking about this woman. And I, well, in fact, I'll talk to you about it afterwards. Let's do that. Let's just play a record. It's from our record of the week, Island Life by Grace Jones. Love is the drug. There, Grace Jones. So last week, now I'm going to introduce our studio guest because I need to talk to you, frankly. It's Lizzie Roper.
Hello.
Actor, comedian, writer.
I get
the
about.
The multifaceted jewel.
Yes.
A fuckle jewel. And Amanda Redman, our producer, is here
Hello.
As well. Hello.
Just the producer. Don't do anything else.
Well, you do have other strings to your bow, but most of them are secret, and if we told them, we'd have to kill them. So now, lovely Lizzie Roper, let me tell you why we are having Grace Jones as our record of the week.
Please do.
So last week, Zoe Lyons was on, and we were talking about Grace Jones and about Pull Up to the Bumper and how when we realised that was about anal sex.
Mm.
And then, serendipitously enough, I went home and I'd bought a gramophone player.
And a strap-on.
And
Lucy Porter.
And my husband and I. A wonderful evening. exploring. I went home and I said, Justin, I'll be Grace Jones.
You can pull up to my bumper, a baby.
I was the long black limousine of the lyrics. But no, I went home and I had brought a gramophone because basically we are turning our suburban bungalow into a late 20th century
I've got a record player. I bought it the last 2 or 3 months.
Good, isn't it?
Don't you, all of
that vinyl that you've just been languishing.
Apart from that, oh, I can finally use it. Just that crackle, crackle.
I know. And accidentally nudging the arm and then scratching all your records. And then just sort of leaving it. And the comforting when it's just playing in the run-out groove. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. And we were sort of looking through. We'd cracked open a homebrew.
Oh,
and
you really are living the dream, aren't you?
We are absolutely living in the 70s, and I love it. I bloody love it. And we cracked open the vinyl, and what should be in my pile of vinyl, as well as every Elvis Costello record ever.
Excellent.
And in Justin's, because we were doing, if any of you have listened to James Acaster's brilliant iPod Shuffle programme, also produced by Amanda Redman, which the brilliant sort of premise of that is people bring in their iPod and then they put it on shuffle and then you chat about what comes up. Justin and I played a kind of old school version of that where he had his collection of vinyl. I have my collection of vinyl.
You had vinyl off.
We have never, because we've never had a record player in all the time we've been together.
Oh.
So I got to see his youthful collection of vinyl and he got to see mine.
Did you fall in love with him more or less?
Well, I mean, I didn't know Ralph McTell had made so many records. And Justin has every Ralph McTell album ever.
That's
some of them
really
signed.
Creepy. Signed?
Yeah. I mean, more than, not all of them, but some of them are signed. But actually, no, quite good. There's one particular Ralph McTell album that's very good. We won't play it on here because Ralph McTell is not, as far as we know, a woman. But anyway, Grace Jones' Island Life was in the pile and I listened to it again and I thought it deserves. I mean, it's a sort of best of compilation from the early part of her career.
Have you seen her live?
No, have you?
I saw her live. In Hyde Park about 2 years ago, and she does this amazing thing. She comes out at one song, she just has a hula hoop on and she's hula hooping.
Yes,
just very gently moving her body. But she sings, it stays up the whole time she was there. And then this weekend, I understand from some friends of mine, she was in Hyde Park again, she was doing the hula hoop. She was naked from the waist up and just had this amazing body paint all over her.
Wow.
So at first you go, oh, what amazing. Boobies.
That's tits.
Boobies.
Wow.
And great, you know, how she's so old and so beautiful and so fabulous and just going, there they are. Those are my nipples.
And often I think over overlooked. When you think about sort of uncompromising women who didn't play the kind of sexy game, like she was always furious. And I mean, the brilliant kind of her. Who did she slap?
Russell Harty.
I mean, yeah, she.
I think we can bring her back now and slap a few more of the modern Russells. That's what we need, a Russell slapper. Dig her up, get her out. Line them up, boys.
Russell Brand would go down like a sack of potatoes, wouldn't he? I mean, he's slight breeze would take him over. So I reckon Russell Kane would give as good as he got. Mm-hmm. Russell Howard would just cry. He'd just cry like a lovely baby. There you go. But anyway, yeah, Grace Jones, we will be hearing more from that record as the evening progresses. And so, Lizzie Roper, tell me about your life. People may have most recently seen you dying.
Of asthma. No, in Hollyoaks. Yes, I did Hollyoaks. Yes, I did Hollyoaks. What on it?
Young people.
Yes. I hung around with very attractive, very young people. I had to share a dressing room with, you know, like 10 very young, beautiful women. It made me feel great about my body. Yeah. I've never felt more confident. Oh, it was brilliant. No, it was fun. I spent 13
months. But
didn't
you, did you think, oh, I'd love to be that young, attractive woman who's in Hollyoaks, or did you think, thank God I don't have to be part of that world anymore?
It's great being old, isn't it? It's great being old and knowing everything. Because when you're young, you think you know everything, but you're wrong. When you're old and you think you know everything, you're only slightly wrong. I really like where I am now. I'm 47. It's so difficult to remember after a while, isn't it?
After a while, you just think it doesn't really round up or round down.
And I'm a bit of an anomaly because I'm always saying, I'm really lucky. I'm not married and I haven't got any kids. And I realised after a while that that's quite an odd thing to say. But it does mean I can go anywhere and do it. Like when Hollyoaks came up, it's like, you have to move to Liverpool next week. I was like, brilliant.
Yeah.
Great, I'm going. How exciting. What a lovely adventure.
I know, and I saw you when you were up in Hollyoaks, and you did bring some of the young people to see one of my stand-up shows.
And they understood all of it.
Well, did they, though?
Yes, they did. I hung out with the clever ones. It's really not fair. There's like 99% of the cast are extraordinary, lovely, wonderful people. 1% is a bit of a bad egg, but we can't talk about her.
Clues! The Hollyoaks fans. I don't know what the Hollyoaks FUBAR crossover is, but I reckon it's probably quite significant.
Tiny Venn diagram. It looked like a dirty bottom, won't it? There you go.
The dirty bottom of Hollyoaks.
It was good fun. I loved it. And I was lucky because Dan Tetzel was there. Dan Tetzel, who's another sort of radio comedy guy.
Yes, one of our age as
He'd been doing it for a couple of months before I went in. So I just rang him up and he gave me the lowdown. And then he played Jim McGinn, the ugly lawyer, while I played D.I. Lacey, the fat policewoman. So when I was a detective inspector. So I would arrest people and get them in the interrogation room, and then Jim McGinn would walk in and go, "Not so fast, D.I. Lacey," and I would go, and that was we would just do that with every single character in the show.
You're
I
doing
loved
very
it.
Good Hollyoaks acting right now in the studio. I've spoken on this programme before about my disappointment at not getting a part in Doctors.
Oh, come on. Everybody, I've done Doctors twice.
Shut up.
I've been recycled.
Everyone's done Doctors.
I played a woman who was marrying her best mate's dad, but that wasn't the problem. That wasn't why her best mate was upset, because my best mate's dad was dead and I was marrying his corpse from my living room. That was a brilliant episode of Doctors. And then the other episode, I played a travel agent. It's a very emotionally crippled woman who was, for some reason, I was having a dieting competition with the woman who worked there, because I think we were trying to sleep with the manager. It was really dodgy. It was really dodgy.
It's nice that you can be in Doctors without really knowing. Like with most acting jobs, you go, what's my motivation? Yeah. What's the backstory of the character? Yeah. Doctors, you just turn up and go, what are the lines?
Well, that's one. The thing about doing, when I was doing the soap thing, because when you're doing long-running soap, at one point I had 50 different episodes of scripts in my script file.
Wow.
And any day, there's five directors working at a time, so any day you're doing a scene from episode 6, episode 39, episode 2, just nothing's in order. So at first you'd turn up and go, do I know that she's the brother of, do I know that he killed, at this point do I, and then, but after you've been there for about 6 months, you're exhausted and you just go, am I happy or am I sad? And that's how you do soap acting.
And most of the time, angry.
Yeah, yeah, very, very angry.
Angry and a bit tired.
Why, yada.
And how did you die?
I died in a car crash.
Oh.
It was a bit weird because we were stationary at the time and we were turning left onto a main road. I wasn't driving. I was a detective inspector. I'd have had all the efficient, you know, the driving whatnot.
You'd have done your
but,
extended.
Of course, my husband was driving because he's got the willy. So he was driving and he pulled out and smashed us into a van. But the exciting thing was we got to go in. We had two cars. We had the car that was good. We had three cars. Car that was driving, car that was all smashed up afterwards, and then we had one car that was in a cradle and we got to go in the cradle with, and they spun us 360 degrees.
Wow.
And they put lots of sweets in the car so you could see all the debris flying around. That was nice.
Well,
hurt my nunny because of the harness, but apart from that it was fine.
Well, the insider secrets of hurt nunnies. Very good. And I used to share a flat in Edinburgh with comedian Richard Herring, who used to watch Hollyoaks religiously.
Did he?
Absolutely, for years and years. He probably still does, even though he's a married father of one.
Oh, I hope he watched me.
I think he's obsessed with it. I'll try and get him on the phone later and see if he's aware of your work. But I am also excited about the next thing that you're doing, because you have a situation comedy for the BBC.
Yes, we filmed it in January up in Manchester. It's called Boy Meets Girl. It's quite groundbreaking. It's Tiger Aspect and BBC Two. BBC Two had a competition about 18 months ago going, right, we want to make a comedy that's positive about the transsexual community. And nobody thought it could be done. And this brilliant young man came forward, Elliot. Can't remember your surname. I'm terribly sorry, darling. And he worked in a bookshop in Waterstones. And just went, yeah, I'll write that. And it's wonderful. It's like Gavin and Stacey. So you've got the central couple, and then who are very sort of normal, and it's just a man meets a woman and they fall in love, and it's adorable. And then around them, their two families are sort of slightly off kilter and a bit mad.
Can we do
a bit.
This and all of that? Is it not really?
It's not even that. Well, what's really nice, I can't give away too much, but it's just it's really gentle. It's really sweet. At no point does the boy go, oh my God, what do you mean? He's just like, yeah, okay, do you want red wine or white wine? And he just loves her. And that was really, it was really sort of lovely to be a part of that. And I think that's coming out in September.
Marvellous. Well, we should look out for that. In fact, that does bring me on to something that I wanted to discuss.
Calendars.
Which was a... this was something that the lovely Margaret K. Bourne-Smith posted on Facebook yesterday.
Yeah.
I just thought it was quite interesting about a... it's 25 examples... Well, it's examples of male privilege as experienced by a trans man. And it's sort of one of those things. It's really interesting and quite depressing because this man who has been taking testosterone for a couple of years, transitioning to becoming a man, and said... sort of made a list of all the things that had changed about the way that people treated him. And he says it's not, this isn't, the point of this article is not to say, to allow transphobic people to share this around and say, see, trans guys are totally reaping all the benefits of patriarchy and we must hate them. Mm. It's just a simple observation about how different things are when you are a man. And the list, the first thing that he's put on the list is, I'm suddenly funny. I've always been dry, sarcastic and satirical with my humour. In the olden times, I was considered unfunny at best and a bitch at worst. Now that I'm a short white guy, people automatically peg me for a comedian and laugh at the bulk of my mouth zings.
Well, we've known that for a while, haven't we? We've all sat through those comedy clubs.
Number two, I'm still taken more seriously. I rarely get interrupted. I get paid more. I mean, imagine that immediately happens. It's easier for me to be poor, as in easier to find work when the person doing the hiring is a white guy. My clothing's more practical. I'm not held accountable for keeping rape from happening. I remember all of the rape prevention education I got, which always focused on how I should behave, or I should walk when, how to appropriately cover my drink and so on. These days I'm told nothing, not even not to rape. And it goes on, and this first article... was so successful and so many people shared it and commented on it. And the bit that got to me, number 23, I'm not subject to soft sexism, which isn't, you know, it's a sort of term that I wouldn't have thought of. But yes, soft sexism, i.e. being asked to grab someone their coffee, help decorate for a work party or help clean up said party, is simply a thing of the past. People think my successes have been made purely by my own gumption. Bloody, 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 blah. Anyway, and so that goes on. So there's 25 in the first list. And then it was so successful that he's gone on and written another list.
Wow.
Of all the other amazing things. Yeah, and it's just, it's sort of, it's on everydayfeminism.com if anyone wants to go and check it out. And it's by James St. James. And yeah, I mean, I have nothing other than sort of delight and respect for him for putting this up. And kind of confirming everything that we always thought
and
was
regret
true.
And depression for being a lady.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, but no, I mean, I don't, you know, it's, you wouldn't want to be one, but you appreciate how nice it would be to be one at certain times. But I thought we do lists mm-hmm. on this show, and I thought maybe we could do, our list could be, what would you most look forward to about being the other gender? What would be the thing that you think, the single thing that you think would most improve your life? And not because, I know there's often people ask the question, oh, if you woke up as a man or a woman, the other gender tomorrow, mm. what would be the first thing that you did? And whenever that question is asked, what do men say? Number one,
I'd
top
play
answer?
With my bosom.
Yeah, play with my tits, never wank. Yeah. And women, the number one answer for women,
I'd sit on the tube with my legs spread as wide as I could.
That's a good one. The actual number one answer is always have a wee standing up. Which is, you know, you go, well, it's not, it's not really, I have done that. I've had a wee standing up. It goes all over your shoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, you regret it afterwards. But we've all, I thought we'd all done that. I can't believe that there are women who haven't ever done a wee standing up, are there? Well, do feel free to tweet us.
I bet my mum hasn't.
Actually, I bet your mum hasn't.
I don't think I've had a wee standing
You've
up.
You've never had a wee standing
I've,
up?
I've certainly been
like
kind
in
of,
a half crouch.
I've been in, you know, very, very slight crouch.
Oh, I've done, I did a terrible mischief to myself once in an outdoor weeing situation. I had recently shaved myself downstairs. Then I'd had very, very vigorous sex with a minor TV celebrity. Then my friend said, come and meet me in Richmond Park and we'll go for a bike ride.
So I love the specific, this is a very specific set of circumstances. Then, right,
but this all happened in like 12 hours. This
shaving sex,
I'd shaved
bike
it, I'd bumped it an awful lot. Then I got on a bike, then I cycled around Richmond Park, and it was a man's bike, so it had a crossbar, and I kept going over lumps of thing, and sort of coming forward and smashing my pudenda on the crossbar.
That is one thing that's better about being a woman, not having that. There you
and
go.
Then I got to the point where I was like, I have to do a wee. I have to do a wee. I'm in the middle of the countryside. My friend said, go in the bushes. So by this time, I'm so dignified. I can't do this sort of thing. So I went off into the bushes and I pulled my pants down to reveal my poor, shaven, bashed, beyond bashed, really red, hot, swollen, ow, noonie, squatted down right on top of a patch of stinging nettles. It's like, how much aggression does my loony need?
Did you manage to wee through the swollen?
I think I screamed and then I was standing. And it was just like, for God's sake, it was just horrific.
Do you know, if anyone at home was taking a sweepstake on how long it would take us to mention vulvas, I estimated about
I've used euphemisms throughout. I win.
Yeah, it's never straightforward doing it. I mean, you really made things hard for yourself there, but it's never. And in the next record, we're going to find out who that minor celebrity was.
That was my sort of thing, exactly.
And we may give clues. We may. We
no,
may not.
No,
no,
really.
We won't. Okay, we won't. Yeah, it's that's a good one. I tell you what, though, you've just added to another list that we had, which was things that are unequivocally better about being a woman and having bicycles with no difficult genital injuring bits.
Why do they have to have a crossbar so they can throw their leg up in the air
I
and
don't
get
know.
On one?
Please, could somebody explain to
now
us?
That we've
mansplain.
Made...
Could someone mansplain why?
Well, obviously, they were made originally because that's a sturdy way of making a bike. But now they know how to make bikes with a sturdy thing that goes down there.
I mean, I presume for a lady's skirt, they might have thought, well, we better take away the crossbar.
Well, it's just a low one now, isn't it?
Do you know? I don't know. I really don't know. I'm at a loss.
Mm. So you don't get that on a Brompton, do you? Brompton's got a low. Oh, I saw a man on a station yesterday folding up his Brompton. I wanted to slap him.
Have you been to the East End and seen the hipsters on penny farthings?
Oh, no way.
Oh, that's a day out that's worth doing.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Well, what, eating bowls of cereal and combing themselves?
Yes, yes. No, the actual penny farthing. The first time I saw one, I did get that. That's just, no, surely that's an urban myth. But no.
Seen it myself.
No, that does actually happen.
And what? A penny farthing, so you're up in the air balancing and your feet can't touch the ground because the wheel is so big.
Yeah. I mean, like, the least practical design. I mean, it is, you know, you go. It was a good first stab at a bicycle. Slightly baffling.
Stuff why
you
would like think that makes me want to buy a gun.
Well, good, intransigence and vulvas in the first little while. I should give us our reader listener feedback before we go any further.
Oh, God, there's people listening to this. People do. You assured me that this would be a little secret between us three.
They listen to the podcast and then I think they just skip through the bits where when I start talking about my menstrual arrangements and when you start talking about your vulva, I think they'll probably go, yeah, we'll just skip that bit. But we did have, because we were talking in a sort of hipster thing last week with Zoe Lyons, we invented or came up with the idea of a landline cafe. So the idea is it's a hipster cafe in Shoreditch or wherever in the rest of the country has the high wanker quotient that Shoreditch has, and you go in and there are landlines on the table. You have to surrender all your modern equipment, and there's landlines and there's very nice notepaper and envelopes, and you sit there and you can make landline phone calls, and you give people your number and say, if you need me, I'm on this landline number. And we discussed this, Zoe and I have actually had someone got in touch via my website and said, I think that's actually an amazing idea. Would you like to talk to me about financing?
Whoa.
I'm not going to, but it was...
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't you remember was it the 80s or 90s? I can't remember how old I am. There was in Soho, there was a restaurant, and the big thing of it was every table had a phone on it. So before mobile phones.
Oh my
every
gosh,
table had a phone
yes.
on it. And you'd sit there, you'd go out there with a bunch of girls, a bunch of boys, and then the phone would ring, and then you pick it up, and this voice from a man sitting three tables would go, oh, what knickers are you wearing? And you're like, oh, he likes me! And then we all grew up. But it's not there anymore. It was on St Anne's Court. I'm sure. I think it's a Mexican restaurant
now. Yeah, do you know
that
really rings a bell? I do remember that. Do you know the Dining in the Dark is still there? That's
still going.
Where is Dining in the Dark?
It's up near Farringdon Station. I was in that area the other day. And
there's a titty bar up there as well, isn't there?
Oh, hundreds. Absolutely hundreds. Well, there was one that closed down, and it was like a real... it was a real pass the pint jar round, and like, you know, you just sort of, it was a really rough old place. And they closed down. I thought, well, yeah, they finally closed down. And it's now reopened as a kind of, so obviously there's still
pass
money.
The bucket sort of place.
It's a pass the champagne bucket, if you don't mind. It's so weird, you know, you just go, yeah, there's still a lot of money to be made in showing men tits. Anyway, that's. I'll just do our other listener roundup. Body shaming. We were talking about times that you had been body shamed. I had been, a man at a bus stop said something I thought was a bit rude, and I then was talking about the fact that my mum's best friend gave me a Thighmaster piece of exercise equipment for my 16th birthday. And Rachel's been in touch to say I was leaving my job, and the other staff had a whip round, and they gave me some vouchers for a boot camp.
What?
Thank God you left that job, really. And I was talking today to the comedian Ben Norris, who is a marvellous comedian.
Marvellous comedian.
And he has a little routine, which is very, very funny, but on this subject of what is unequivocally better about being a woman than being a man. And he was saying orgasms, that the female orgasm is generally deemed superior.
It's longer and more frequent.
Yes, he said, I think, do go to his website, everybody, and buy his... He's got a CD for sale, and I think probably he talks about this on that, but the idea that there's waves of pleasure, that we get waves of pleasure, and I was like, yeah, that is true. Mm. That is true. They're pretty good.
And the waves of pleasure we get from laughing at a man's cum face.
Yeah, but have you ever seen your own cum face? I mean,
I look beautiful when I'm coming. I'm like a goddess. It's coming out of Vesuvius.
So dignified with a newly shaven, battered vagina.
Todd vagina.
Yes, that's all. That's all anyone's had to say this week. It was a slow week on the emails and the
they're still probably listening to it now. They're just on catch up.
Well, they're still trying to digest wondrousness of it.
You just sit there and play with your Thighmaster.
I am tempted, because actually that would fit in quite well with our 70s theme park home.
Oh,
Thigh masters were really big in there. They were like the Nutribullet of the day,
weren't they? And they just weren't, you know, that was it. It was an exercise bike, mm-hmm. like a weights bench if you were a, you know, odd man. And then the thigh master for a lady. That
I remember when my parents, they moved to Guernsey when I was about 20, and my mother used to go to all these house sales where they'd sell off people's houses. And I didn't think they existed apart from in the Flintstones cartoons. But my mother managed to buy one of those machines. You'd stand in it and there'd be a big square box there, and there'd be a belt that went round, and the belt would jiggle you thin.
Oh my gosh, so my mother, right. I've never seen one of those in real life.
My mother bought one of these things, and because my mother is insane, and my mother's always had this thing about, oh, if you've got something and it's good and you see it, she then went to the next week and there was another one. So in our house there are two Fred Flintstone wobble your way to a better life, neither of which have ever been used.
Do they work?
No. If they worked, so standing on a bus, you'd lose weight, wouldn't you? Jesus.
Oh, no, I mean, do they actually function? Not do they work?
They turned on.
I'm just wondering if we could get them into studio. That's all I'm thinking. Guernsey. Them over from as a special treat.
No, I can send you a photo. They're both looking quite forlorn, just in the corner together, with the two loneliest machines in the world.
It's nice to have a his and hers. Yeah. I should get Justin a thigh master. I have his and hers thigh masters. For man spreading on the tube, I'll just.
Maybe that's what they were doing.
Yeah, they've just got secret hidden thigh masters. Invisible thigh masters, that's what they're doing. Now, would you like to start with. So, we're going to discuss various things this evening, Lizzie. Would you like to start with the thing that inspired and gladdened me this week, or the thing that depressed and upset me this week?
Well, let's go gladdened first.
Let's go gladdened. Good. This is now something I'm going to start. This could be a thread, I think, Amanda, or a strand, or whatever you call these things, of film club. Gender film club. This week I watched a film called In a World. Have you seen this?
In a World.
It's called In a World, and it's about 2 years old, so many of our listeners may be thinking, yeah, we remember when that came out. It stars a woman called Lake Bell, who wrote, produced and directed it.
Oh, right.
And it is brilliant. And I can't believe, I remember when it came out, people saying, oh, this is a really funny, sweet little indie film.
Is Lake Bell, who's in this new Simon Pegg film?
Yes, that's her. And she is awesome in it. It's kind of like, I remember seeing Lena Dunham in Tiny Furniture, her first film, and going, you're amazing, where have you been all my life? And Lake Bell similarly is just a brilliant sort of deadpan physical comic, and really sort of quite rangy and awkward, and her love interest in this film In a World is Dimitri Martin, who is just a peach. Who I remember seeing at the Edinburgh Festival when
he
won the Edinburgh Comedy Award. When it was still the Perrier, actually.
Oh my gosh!
And he's adorable and just so lovely. And it's a film all about voiceover artists in LA.
Oh, I need to see this.
You would love it. You have done a bit yourself, haven't you? Yeah. Can you give us one of your favourite voiceovers?
When Spiders Go Bad, tonight at 8 on Discovery.
You see, it's a brilliant skill to have. And so, yes, it's called In a World, and the basic premise is that Lake Bell plays this woman who is an aspiring voiceover artist. Her dad is one of the biggest voiceover artists in Hollywood, and the big guy who does all the In a World trailers dies, and they're looking for the new voice of the In a World trailers. And it's her, and then there's this kind of sleazy rich guy and her dad, and they're all in competition to get this amazing voiceover gig. And it is the most brilliant, lovely, sweet, funny little film. It's only an hour and a half.
Yes, but is it on Netflix?
I think it is.
Oh, good, because I don't like to leave the house.
No, I don't think you have to. You definitely don't have to go to a cinema. It's not on any cinemas at all. You've not got to trouble yourself with popcorn. Mm. And it's really lovely and really uplifting, and I won't spoil the end, but Gina Davis makes an amazing cameo. Yes.
Is it called In a World or In a World?
In a World.
In a World, okay. Because I thought it was like internal.
Oh, Inner World. Yes.
So it's In a World. Yes. That's all you need to know. I'm writing it down.
If I were a better vocal performer, I would have made that distinction.
No, it's easily done.
But, also, it does have lovely insights into the world of voiceover. Because I've done a lot of it. In fact, you know, I had one recently, and I think I caused a bit of a hoo-ha.
Well, you're too old now to be polite when the client's an idiot, aren't you?
Yeah, I did. But, I mean, you know, yeah, it was quite... Anyway.
What did you do? Or do we need to play a record?
Well, maybe we should... While we talk about your minor celebrity... I'll run it by you and then we can see if it's suitable. Shall we have... No, that's terrible now because I feel like we're making the listener feel like we're going to be having...
I think it's probably time for a record anyway.
It is probably time for a record.
I'm going to make it longish so that we can have these discussions.
Yeah. It's not like... We're not having more fun than you, everyone. It's just that...
But we are.
We're kind of just...
I'm touching myself.
Ah, her red swollen. Let's just get that image. As we play this record, just think about the red swollen mama. Yeah, good. Right, what record are we going to have to go with that image?
Well, whilst I think it should be Lizzie's record, while okay. she's touching herself, I think it should be something of her.
It's not I touch myself
choice.
By the divine.
I really wish it was.
Oh, that's it. That's one of the best female masturbation records ever.
Lizzie, would you like to introduce your record?
Yes, this is one of my favourite songs.
To touch yourself to?
No, because it's everything that it's my like total philosophy. It's Elastica's Waking Up, because I'm terrible at it.
Okay. Let's get Justine on the go. Come on, Justine, where are you?
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
There we go, Waking Up by Elastica. And now let's bear in mind that Lizzie Roper said this is her personal manifesto, essentially. sums up your life ethos. Mm. So the lyrics there, I'd work very hard, but I'm lazy. I've got a lot of songs, but they're all in my head.
Yeah.
I'll get a guitar and a lover who pays me. If I can't be a star, I won't get out of bed.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Mm. Going back to not having kids, I'm of an age, I earn enough money when I'm working and I don't need to when I'm not. So... I go to bed at night and I don't put an alarm on.
Yeah.
I wake up when the cat jumps on my head and she's pretty laid back. It's good being me.
I know, and then you just get up, do a bit of voiceover, go back to bed again.
Yeah.
Yes, it's ideal. You're also a star of the Aunt Bessie. This is something... What I want is to give our listeners a picture of who we have sitting in studio.
A really sexy lady.
A sexy lady
who can dress up in nylon. Oh, picture the scene. An old wig.
But that's it, because you've been doing that since you were about 20, haven't you?
No, Bessie's has been going, Bessie's, as we call it in the business. I can't say too much about this. I don't want to upset the client.
Yes.
I've been doing it for 5 years. It's been great. It was a job I got 5 years ago, and you think it was a one-off, and then the next year the phone rang, and you think that'll be the end of it, and then the next year, and the next year, and it's great. Caroline, who's the other woman, she completely refurbished my flat in Bayswater. She was fantastic.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, but we're really good friends now. We've had to do all sorts. We do odd little pitches. We turn up at head office. There's all sorts of stuff you don't see that we do on TV. we sponsored the Chain Habages.
Bloody character.
We had to do one thing. We had to turn up and we had to do a Ready, Steady, Cook with all the heads of department, which I loved in character. And then we had to go around the office and I had to hand out bags of frozen potatoes to people. And they weren't working on that account. So they didn't know what on earth was happening. These two old women coming through.
Oh, young man. Oh, you're out of short trousers. That's exciting, isn't it? Would you like a frozen potato?
Because you did for some time a character who I loved. Lady Agatha.
Oh, Lady Agatha.
And Lady Agatha's thing was very much sort of sexually objectifying young men. And
no, women. Lady Agatha was not about... Well, no, Lady Agatha was delusional. She was 96 and she thought that everybody she met was a relative.
Oh,
so
yes.
She was very big on just accusing them of doing stuff that they'd never done before and just being that wonderful thing that old people can be so gloriously rude and never have to apologise and complete non sequiturs. I've got no colon. Just what? She was great. It was brilliant because at the time I was sort of doing. I dabbled in stand up. I dabbled, and every now and again, in stand up, you write lines. You go, "That's brilliant," but I can't say that. I'll die. It'll kill the set. But I could give it to Agatha and. Get away with murder.
Nice to have an alter ego, isn't it? It's very nice. In fact, do you know what that voiceover job, talking of being an older lady, so the voiceover job, the thing that upset me was the line that I was expected to say was, we see two women, they are in their 60s but still attractive. And I did have to kind of go, look, I'm sorry, we can't, no, it's two women in their 60s and they're very attractive, and, or two attractive ladies.
How does that
in their
go
60s?
Down?
All right, actually. I think he was a nice man and he saw the... kind of went, oh, okay, yeah. No, that was bad. But, you know, still, you feel you should have to point it out, don't you? Mm. Now, we were talking while Elastica was playing. We were listening to it and enjoying it. But we were also talking about the mistakes of our youth and things that we regret. And this leads me on to something I wanted to discuss. So having really enjoyed the Lake Bell Inner World film, I then listened to a radio documentary on Radio 4.
Fancy
I know,
ways.
I'm very cold. Normally I listen to Radio 3, to be honest, but I was slumming it. And so Radio 4, there was a little... And it's on iPlayer, if anyone wants to go and look it up. It was called Sugar Baby, Sugar Daddy.
Yeah.
And it was all about young women who are students, and there's like masses of websites now where younger women... And it is, you know, they kept saying in the documentary, they kept going, younger women, all men, and younger, older men, all women, but it's largely it's older men, younger women. So if you're a woman who is at university, you can get a sugar daddy who will basically pay you for companionship. And
what, often accompanying your penis in the palm of their hands?
Yes, that escorting your penis to orgasm.
That's so nice, isn't it? Isn't that nice?
Well, do you know, though, it was really interesting because it's one of those subjects that I think I've never really fully grasped my own feelings about it. Like, it did make me uneasy and uncomfortable in lots of ways, because of course all the women who are doing this are very convinced and very, you know, they're intelligent, coherent women, and they're like, well, this is my decision, you know, they're very convinced of their own agency in all of this, and that, you know, the classic sort of, well, really, in some ways I feel like I'm exploiting them. But it was a remarkable, really interesting glimpse into the world of these websites, because of course they had a PR woman on. So this website basically connects older men and younger women, and they come to an arrangement, and of course the website has a PR person, and you just think, God, that must be a hard job to have, because basically every interview you have, you're going to have to go, well, of course it's not prostitution. No, and she of course had to do that. But I mean, it kind of is. I think it kind of is.
It has to be. I give you money and you give me sex. I think that's prostitution.
I know, but it was, I mean, it was kind of interesting because there was a woman whose mother, she told her mother about this, and her mother, who was interviewed on the programme, said, actually, I was quite proud of her. I think it's a brave thing to do, and I'm glad she wanted to discuss it with me. Of course, my friends are all pretty aghast. As long as I felt that she was really happy and enjoying what she was doing, I couldn't see any problem with it, and I thought it was a great solution. All kids are born with talents. My daughter happens to have been born with beauty and sexual allure. It's like a commodity. And there was sort of discussion of this kind of erotic capital, which is a thing that I've become aware of people talking about recently, which is it's, you know, I do feel like now we are living in this kind of late capitalist world where if you have something that people want to pay you money for, then, you know, the sort of natural free market approach is, well, yeah, if you can monetize something, then why shouldn't you do it? And if there are... And the thing that I find difficult about it is that obviously my initial reaction is, ah! You disgusting men, get your hands off these lovely
Why do you have to pay for it?
Well, yeah, you're weird. But
it's actually buying another person. It's that whole thing of, like, I buy you and I have certain expectations of you.
Yes.
And it's an incredibly unequal relationship.
Yeah, and your financial power is way in excess of any power, as much as... You know, you may feel like you're empowered in other ways when you're in that kind of transactional relationship. You're really not, because you are being bought and sold by another person.
And like you say, it boils down to this erotic exchange. Like, you know, you're young and you're pretty. Oh, yes, but they're also intelligent. It's like, no, I don't think there's going to be a very intelligent university student out there who's dog ugly, who's still going to be getting men going, I'm not, I don't want her for her looks. I want to give her money because she's so intelligent and funny to hang out with. No, you want her because she looks really, really attractive. And she does now. And then in 15 years' time, because society apparently has put so much value into young women, you're not going to find her that more attractive. But you'll be older and you'll be able to buy something even younger. And it will perpetuate this horrific situation where women get bought.
I know, but then, you know, you do think, well, I'm sure there are plenty of women. What I'm sort of interested in is the kind of potential harms to the women themselves, really, more than that kind of sort of what effect does it have on society or on ageism or anything even. It is just like, because I think there probably are a significant number of young women who can enter into this kind of arrangement and then, you know, and have sex like men and then come out of it and absolutely be absolutely fine. I don't think there's necessarily kind of long-term harms to all of the women who engage in this, but I suspect that there will be to a significant number of them. And it does, you know, it is kind of what it does to your own sense of self-worth and what you value about yourself and, you know, what you feel. I think if... Yeah, it is that if you feel like your value lies in your erotic capital rather than your intellectual prowess or other aspects of your personality, then that can only be damaging.
I hate that because we're just marching into a future where society is just constantly underlining the fact that women are valuable because they're young and pretty, and I will buy you because you're young and pretty, and we'll continue to do that. We'll continue to see little girls wearing T-shirts going, I'm going to be a footballer's wife when I grow up. You're going to have all that stuff. Just I'd like it all to stop, please.
Well, I think there is also, there is an inherent dishonesty in all of this, isn't there? That it is, like, if you are going to buy and sell sex, then at least be honest about it. And there is still this pretense that comes from the, you know, the people who facilitate it, like the website organisers and stuff, of going, well, it is just, no, it's just about companionship and it's just about...
But they're only colouring it in because... prostitution's illegal.
Yes.
They're only giving it that slant because they can't say, whoa, come and buy your gash, lads! Because they know that they'll be taken off.
Yeah. It's a depressing... It was a very depressing world. And But one of the things that I found quite heartening about it was that at the end, one of the women who was involved, they said, oh, and she's since stopped... doing this because she fell in love with another student.
Sleep every night.
Oh, okay. It was like, yeah, you know, this is what is kind of meant to happen, and there is this sort of, yeah, this sort of, it's just creepy. There was, because the guy who they interviewed, he'd spent £40,000 on one of his dates,
right,
going to Las Vegas for like the weekend, and it's just that sort of obscene level of money. You just go, what are you trying to prove by how great is your need for...
Well, we're back in the 80s, aren't we? We've got this whole austerity thing kicking and the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and you've got men who can afford to spend £40,000 on a weekend thing, and you've got food banks popping up all around the country.
There was
that bloke on the tube last week who was photographed doing cocaine off his hands.
Oh, God, he must feel like an utter prick. Imagine how... I mean... I've had bad days at work, but that is really... I mean, you know... Yeah. Although maybe his friends all think he's a legend, you know, because actually...
Oh, I bet they do. I bet they do.
That is the culture, isn't it? Is that it's...
And prostitutes. He has cocaine. He's winning. He's living the dream.
He's on the tube, though. So, you know, it was in a private jet or something, then fair enough. But anyway, I would urge people to listen to the Sugar Baby, Sugar Daddy documentary, because it was... Or Sugar Daddy, Sugar Baby. It's that
even
way
that. Why is one a daddy? Why is one a baby? Why have we got to infantilise women in this situation? You're putting your dick in them and you want to call them a baby?
Ooh. There's a bit, again, going back to In a World, the Lake Bell film, there's a brilliant bit in that where there's this girl who's got a really annoying voice and she talks like that. And in the end, Lake Bell says to her, you know, why do you think you're not taken seriously at work? And she goes, because I sound like a sexy baby. Yeah. Yes, that's that depressing thing. Shall we move on?
Thank you very much, Lucy.
I know, I've brought
I'll
you
stop
all
self-harming
down.
Now.
There's a good thing. Revenge porn. Google are finally acting on revenge porn. Victims of revenge porn will be able to fill out an online form to request that any offensive pages be hidden from any future search results.
Mm.
Which is quite nice to be able to say, can you please take their...
I've got some reviews out there I'd like taken down.
Yeah. Well, possibly involving nude or sexually explicit images, actually.
No, I was never that stupid.
No. The thing that sort of interested me about that story is, of course, the comments that people... So, you know, this is... probably a good move on Google's part to say, we understand that this is a problem and that there are horrible people who will share photos given in good faith when you're in a relationship. But then all the comments were people going, if you don't want to have your pictures shared, why not just not take them? And it does seem like, I sort of get that, but it does seem so old-fashioned, because I think everybody does it now. I think it is one of those things that everybody takes nude photos of themselves.
Are you and Justin taking nude
photos
of each other?
No, my God. Oh, just imagine. I think he would. I mean, if I sent him a picture of Ralph McTell, that would be acceptable. If I sent him a picture of me naked.
See, I think we're lucky. You're over 40. Are you over 40?
I am. I am 42.
See, I think we're lucky because we were that
you know, in my 20s, you couldn't take photos because you had to take them to Boots. To get developed. And they'd either come back with a sticker saying blurry, out of focus, or oh, goodness knows what that is. I'm terribly sorry, madam. You'd have to... so we just wouldn't, would we? Because we'd have to go to a third party. But with the advent of digital stuff, and oh, look, you can have a video. And oh, you can do it on my phone. It's just...
Well, I was an early adopter of technology. I'll just say that and leave it there.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But even though Google are going to take down these images, we all know the way that the internet works. Something horrific goes up and then somebody copies it and downloads it. So you can remove it as much as you like.
But you'll never get rid of it, but at least it won't be the first thing that comes up on a search when someone searches for your... with a prospective employer, say, or...
Oh, my God, how awful. It hadn't even occurred to me.
But it is one of those that you think, yeah, I mean, of course, I will tell my daughter not to take photos of her new knee and send them to people because, you know, you are placing a lot of trust in another person. But it does seem kind of sad because actually, you know, there is a lot to be said for if you are in a relationship and you're away from each other, you know, and you want to stay in touch. And, you know, I don't think it's an unpleasant... Like, it doesn't make me... I don't think there's something wrong with people doing that. I think there is something very wrong with someone sharing that if they know that you've split up and it will hurt you to share it online. And I think that is really... You know, I think it's easy to blame victims of revenge porn.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, because also the thing is that at the end of the day, guys do not mind if they have sent a dick pic, as I believe the young people call them, they don't mind it being shared. So,
but a dick pic doesn't have a face on it, does it? Unless your dick is really well advanced and there's a mouth on the end of it. But dick pics, that could be mine, that could not be mine. It's not the same as... And there's something about being naked that really... Like, look, Game of Thrones, the last episode of Game of Thrones, it has the biggest thing they can do to humiliate that woman is to make her walk naked through the streets. That's how you really strip somebody down to the core.
You see
them naked. I've seen you naked. I remember there was a photo of Andrea Merkel with her boobs out on some beach thing when she was younger, and that was being passed around. Because how do you strip a woman of her power? Look, there she is, naked.
Yeah. Well, even now, like photoshopping. Didn't they do? There was some pre-election thing where they photoshopped a load of female politicians into sexy. Yeah.
Oh God!
But I mean, it is. I used to do that.
Sorry.
Someone alerted me to a website where they'd done sort of porn images of various sort of female celebrities.
Oh.
And me and Izzy Sooty.
Wow. Were you going at each other
or were you? We'd been locked up as, in separate instances. But we used to do that really awful.
On late night Hollyoaks shoots. We'd have to be there like at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And of course, with Hollyoaks has got some very young, very pretty men and women in it. Mm. And they have a huge fan base. And my God. We would just go, oh, you come on. We'd just put in an actor's name with naked next to it. The most extraordinary stuff was coming out. We would be howling with laughter.
Oh, things that fans have made.
Fans and of that male actor doing something to that male actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, really well done. I was in a play here at the Pleasance, actually, where my character is found out. A photograph is found of my character giving head to another one. And Chris Lindsay mocked up this amazing photo. He got one of my old publicity photos and he put a thing in my mouth. And it looked absolutely amazing because it was a prop. We needed it for the show. It was really, really important. And when he presented to me with it, I was like, I don't remember having this. And I was like, oh no, that's my publicity. Like, whatever you do, Chris, whatever you do, you have to get rid of it. You have to dump the file.
Yeah.
You have to burn. I can't. Please don't let this come out.
Yeah,
it was just too horrifically real.
I know, and it's like once you know those kind of images are out there, you do kind of think, oh yeah, well, I mean, I have no control. Like, increasingly, you just have no control over your own image anyway. And but also, like, you know, my husband has been there's fan, you know, like fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the most remarkable things about him and members of the Penny Dreadfuls.
Wow.
And, like, yeah, amazing.
Putting their penny in his slot.
Full-on erotic porn stories.
Wow.
It's
a different world, isn't it?
Well, it is a different world. And again, you go, well, like, there's, you know... I, is there anything wrong if people want to imagine things?
But I think there's something so inherently different about a man being naked and a woman being naked. Yeah. Like in a comedy.
Yeah.
If a man runs around naked, it's funny. If a woman runs around naked, it's sexy.
Yeah.
If a man's photograph of him is naked, it's like, oh, well, look, he's naked and he's butch. And if a woman's naked and it gets out, it's, oh, look, oh, God, tarty,
well, also,
slag, slut.
Talking about being older as well, it's like the very idea of seeing as an older actor, like, people don't expect you to get naked and they don't want you to get naked, you know.
I've offered.
I know, well, actually, you know, you just don't see it. And this, you know, sort of Lena Dunham presenting kind of normal female bodies and it's sort of normal female nudity, you still don't see older women with their kit off.
Because that's why I like going to the swimming pool.
Yes, yes, yes.
I love changing in a swimming pool with a load of random women who I could be in the supermarket with, but I'm actually in a communal changing room with, and we're all naked, and they're all different shapes and sizes and cellulite and
some of them are flossing their private bits with a towel.
Some of them are using a hairdryer, and I just because as a woman, you don't get to see proper naked bodies. We're inundated with images of naked women day after day after day, and they're lean and they're tight and they're pert and they're young and pretty and gorgeous, and that's lovely. That's really lovely. Yeah, congratulations on your lovely young type body, and all you've had to do to achieve that is be young. But, you know, give me some experience and show me some real proper women who've had some dinner.
Yeah,
I love it.
I know. Well, actually, that is one of the best things about sort of physical exercise as a woman. Not only do you get all the psychological and health benefits of it, but also, yeah, you do get to see what real flesh looks like. And what it looks like bobbling around.
It's quite comforting.
Yeah. Oh, my Zumba class. Well, in fact, I do that hot yoga.
And, do you?
Oh, God, and we're all stripped down. Because you have to be. You have to be stripped down. There's no room for, you know, standing on ceremony in your hot yoga class. And it is brilliant. Because when, you know, I first went, I was like, oh, I don't really want to, you know, be in a, like, bikini or whatever. Mm. And then, yeah, eventually, oh, I didn't, you know, it doesn't matter. We're all in here. We're all sweating. And, yeah, and it's also very big, sweaty, hairy men. And, you know, very old men, very old women. And
it's going to stink.
It really does. But do you know what? It's fresh sweat. It's not unpleasant.
Yeah, but not everybody's got fresh sweat, have they? Some of them have got fresh sweat on top of really old sweat. That's the one that really upset me. God, riding a tube every night, that's bad enough.
I know, but that's pongy old day old sweat. I tell you what, come to the hot yoga, but it's a pleasant aroma, if anything.
Yeah, well, I'll stick to my swimming.
Should we have a record?
Yes.
I think really we need to all have a shower.
Oh, spicy.
There is a shower here.
Is there?
Yeah, I think it would only fit about half of me in. I did try and have a shower in there once, but that's another story.
Hello.
Let's have Grace Jones pull up to the bumper, because we've been talking about that track for the last 2 weeks.
We've been talking about it and how filthy it is.
Let's hear for ourselves.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Right, there we go, we're back. Pull up to the bumper. I wasn't really listening to the words sufficiently there to pull up.
Anal sex, baby. And put it in my bum. If you slow it down, that's what it says.
Yeah, if you play it backwards, then she's actually asking for a nice cup of tea.
Very naughty, young
Very lady. Bloody naughty, but excellent. Yeah, Bond, you know, Bond villain.
Gets around.
All sorts. Now, let's talk about... should we quickly talk about male flip-flops?
Oh, go on then.
Well, I was... I don't have any interest in fashion, as you know, Lizzie Roper, but the latest Marc Jacobs Spring 2016 men's collection, which was on display at Milan.
Aww.
In Milan. It is just something that you have to look up. Dear listener, go and have a look at it. Because it is... It's a man... They've got this model who looks like he needs a wash and he needs to stand up straight.
And brush his hair.
I've got to the age where really fashion is all a mystery to me, but particularly men's fashion. Have a look at this. So Marc Jacobs' collection, but the striking thing about it is the flip-flop, the male flip-flop. And again, I've always thought anyone should be able to wear any item of clothing. Whatever your gender, but it just struck me. I've never seen a man in a flip flop.
Well, back in the day when I still used to do internet dating, when I was still functioning from below the waist and hadn't turned to chalk, I'd got sort of quite a good email exchange going with this bloke, and he always seemed quite interesting. And then, you know, I arranged to meet him somewhere, and it was a lovely hot summer day. And I turned up at the meeting spot, and there was a bloke who looked a bit like him, but he was wearing shorts, sort of baggy shorts that ended above the knee. And he was wearing flip-flops, and he had toenails the size of gravestones. They were the most disgusting. They were yellow and thick and turning up. They were just, yeah. They were so, so disgusting that you'd be thinking, A, you've got the most appalling feet in the world, but B, if you do have the most appalling feet in the world, then wear shoes. For God's sake, wear shoes. But he was wearing flip-flops, so I took one look at him and think, well, he's obviously not my date. I shall wait over here. So I went and waited over there, and then 5 minutes later he appeared in front of me and went, "Hi, Lizzie." Yes.
And did you then look down at the feet?
Well, I tell you, he was a really, really, really nice bloke, and I went on two dates with him, but I could not get past the toenails. And the second date he wore the flip-flops as well, and it was just like,
Well, you had an obligation to say something.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
What? Like what?
Yes, you did. If someone is dating and you know that they're doing something that is absolutely guaranteed to put off people, I do think you've got a moral obligation to say something.
Give me one example when you ever did that, when you ever met somebody for the first time and annihilated them in front of them.
Obviously, I have never done it. Obviously, when I say this, I'm claiming a moral high ground that I have no right
I don't
to
agree with you, because I think there's somebody out there who is looking for a man with toenails like gravestones.
There's someone who would be prepared to overlook it, I'm absolutely sure, and someone who's not as shallow and...
I'm very shallow.
..as hard to please as you are. But, see, there was a stand-up comedian who loads of my friends really fancied, and they were like, "Oh my God, he's the most amazing, he's so gorgeous." Yeah. And we were doing a festival together, and on the way back from this festival, I was driving, and it was a very hot day, in fairness. And he went, "Oh, I'll just slip my shoes off." And he slipped his shoes off in the car, and the sight and smell of his feet. Again, it's a really odd one, isn't it? That it is such. Because I don't know, it was just, I thought, if your level of personal grooming in your feet, because I mean, he had like, you know, quite unpleasant toenails, but filthy, absolutely crusted with filth. And I mean, we'd been at a festival, but not like, it was only a day festival. It wasn't like you'd been there for 3 days. It's like, well, you must have arrived with your feet like this.
Dirty.
And I did, and then I had to go back and report to all my female friends who really fancied him. I was like, well, it's fine, but...
Wow.
Need to know about the foot issue. Because I think, we're just talking about men wearing flip-flops and disgusting feet. Amanda just went to the loo. It's not really a gender issue. I think it's just look after your feet, be you man or woman. And in a way, I hope that man that you had the dates with is listening.
No!
And weeping. Weeping into his wireless.
It's so embarrassing. I'm only doing this on the premise that nobody listens.
I know, you know.
Go away. Go and do some housework.
Shall we crack open a gin?
Yes!
Here's to that man with his disgusting feet. There you go. There you go. It's the.
It's about this time of day. I like to drink gin out of a tin.
It's the gin tin hour.
Blimey.
Local supermarket.
Are these doubles?
£2 to £3. I think they're pretty strong. They're certainly not meant for pregnant ladies. It's one.
Are you pregnant?
Point three. No. There's just a picture on a pregnant.
No, don't look at me. I'm not pregnant.
Don't look at me.
I don't do any of that stuff anymore.
Nice. So,
gin.
Do you know what that just reminded me of, talking about dating and what have you, is the brilliant show that you did called Peccadillo Circus. And I think our listeners would be interested in the premise and the execution of that particular show.
Well, Alecky Blythe, who has just done London Road, the film.
The most brilliant thing in the world, Alec.
Which came out of London Road, the play musical at the National Theatre.
It's one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire bloody life.
I worked with her on a show she was doing about Wimbledon, and Alecky learnt this technique, and it's where you interview people and you record the people speaking to you. And then you chop it up, and then the actor goes on stage wearing headphones, and it takes a while to practice. But the deal is that you just have to repeat absolutely every single thing that you hear. So half of your brain
verbatim
is listening, and half of your brain is speaking. But you're not just repeating what they're saying. You are doing every lip smack and
And if you're, oh, do you want a cup of tea? But because I said to it, and you're just doing all the weird little idiosyncrasies that people use when they're speaking, and people don't speak in sentences, and people use wrong words, and they don't punctuate themselves properly. So it makes for quite a, it's an odd thing, because it's like making a documentary and then acting it out. And I really fell in love with the technique. And then
it's brilliant, like in London Road, that sort of, because it's about the women who were murdered in Ipswich. Some years ago now, and about the reaction of the community, because these women were sex workers, and the reaction of the community, and it's such a beautiful play. And it's the thing that always really strikes me about it is it's the inappropriate laughter that British people always do, yes. Where you're talking about dead people and you're going anyway, and then she was dead.
Because you know, the great thing is that if that person was being filmed, they knew there was going to be, it was going to be their face on film being filmed, they would monitor themselves and they would edit themselves. But because you're sitting in a room having a cup of tea, talking to somebody with eye contact, and you're just like all your guards are down, and everything comes out, and you speak on a very, very one-to-one level, and it's not, and when it's performed, it's no longer one-to-one, it's 1 to 1,000. Mm-hmm. So I just absolutely loved it. I thought it was a really interesting way of working. And you know, having had a background in comedy, and then realizing that these laughs, I knew about setups and I knew about punchlines, and these were something else. These laughs were coming from another sort of level, another sort of play, either from sort of the inappropriateness or the way that they backed onto something else, or just the freedom that the person was speaking with.
Yeah. And you could never write, in a million years, you would never write in the awkward laugh or the weird silence.
Well, then I thought I wanted to do a show about people's sex lives. And I knew it would be, you know, it would be a very, very intimate thing, and it would be perfect, and I could cut it all together. And I didn't even know what the premise was. I just wanted to talk to people about sex because I'm very lonely. but this was a long time ago. So I just started putting sort of adverts out on the internet and on Gumtree, and various people, very nicely, people would come and go, yeah, I'll talk to you about my sex life. And I met some amazing people, some really, really amazing people. And it was just that wonderful thing about, what I really liked about it was that, you know, a society, again, we're told that sex is for young, tight, pretty people. It's for the youth. It's for beauty. It's and I was meeting people of all sorts of shapes and sizes and ages, and, you know, and some were happier with their life and some weren't. And it's like, no, everybody does it. Everybody does. Everybody you sit next to on the bus has done it, and they might be doing it tonight. And they've all got their own little thing on it. I love doing it. I love chopping it all up. You know, sometimes it was slightly frightening.
Did you have a favourite, or did you have a moment where you were like, oh, I can't, can I really expose this to the public gaze?
Well, I was very, well, the one that didn't make the cut, my friend Finny, who's mad, she's mental, and she's like, I knew somebody you should go out with, oh, he's widowed, oh, he'd love you, David Attenborough. No, I'd like to meet David Attenborough, but not in a sort of blind date type way. So she said, I know who you'd speak to, Father Bing Bong, or whatever his name was, this vicar that she was friendly with, who was she'd met through her daughter's school. I was like, a vicar, that'd be amazing. That'd be amazing to speak to a priest about his sex life, or what he considers, you know, to be his sex life, or what his opinions are on pornography. So I rang up this, I said, hello. And she'd said that she'd spoken to him. And I said, oh, well, you know, our mutual friend, she said she'd come and interview you. So I ended up sitting in a vicar's kitchen, surrounded by cats. And I was terribly embarrassed. I went to a Catholic school.
Was he a Catholic priest?
He was a Catholic priest. Okay. And then I'm trying to sort of veer around to these questions. And and I started by saying, oh, so did Finny explain to you what this is all about? No, not really. I was like, oh, God. Can't deal with it. So I sort of, every now and again, I was like, oh, what do you think about pornography? I was like, just get me out of here. I just want to die. I want to die. I want to die. I want to die. So he didn't make it. I mean, he said some very interesting things. But he said he didn't make it.
the unwilling priest didn't make it into the final edit. Because I do think that, you know, it's endlessly fascinating. And all those sort of documentaries about people's sex lives and, you know, but you do always feel like they're performing for the camera, or there's some, you know, there's just a self-consciousness. Whereas what I loved about that was that it did really feel like you were channeling these men, women,
just opening themselves up. Thank God. I was very lucky.
That's very good. You must revive that. That's what I'm going to...
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
I'm going to make that a project of mine. I'm going to... there you go. I'm putting
that on my
to-do
list. I've got
some new ones in. Yeah, you could do me.
Really?
You could do me. No one would ever know.
But I'd have to do your accent and everything.
Yes. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm not sure how interesting it would be. Now, shall we talk about...
The strap-on?
The... we had... Now, last week, someone very kindly suggested our Woman of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
And now, hopefully this is going to happen every week, because we had... Somebody wrote to me, whose name I have lost. Anyway, sorry, I will find out and I will credit you later. To say that they thought we should do The Life of James Barry. Now, you'll be thinking, James, surely that's a gentleman's name. But James Barry is, because we've been talking about sort of things transgender, mm-hmm. and it's a sort of a historical life of great interest, and many of you may already be aware of James. James Miranda Stuart Barry was born Margaret Ann Bulkley, mm-hmm. and was a military surgeon in the British Army. After graduation from the University of Edinburgh Medical School, Barry served in India and Cape Town and rose to the rank of Inspector General in charge of military hospitals. And it's a sort of interesting tale of someone who was born in... Well, they're not sure exactly when James Barry was born, but sort of around the end of the 18th century. And so... This young woman decided she wanted to be a doctor, but you weren't allowed to be a doctor if you were a woman, obviously. So with the help of her family and some influential liberal-minded friends of her family, including Francisco de Miranda, the famous Venezuelan revolutionary, they managed to get Margaret into medical school. And then from that point on, she lived as a man, travelled all over the world, and was not only the first woman to qualify as a medical doctor,
mm-hmm.
Although obviously no one knew that it was a woman, and she ended up performing the first known successful cesarean section.
Wow!
Oh, I know. We have James Barry to thank.
I was a cesarean.
There we go. Thank you, James Barry.
Thank you very much, James Barry.
But isn't it because then, you know, she kind of ended up living as a man for the whole of her life, and it was only when she died that people discovered that she had actually, she had female genitalia. And Florence Nightingale said, "I never had such a blackguard rating in all my life than from this Barry sitting on his horse. While I was crossing the hospital square with only my cap on in the sun, he kept me standing in the midst of quite a crowd of soldiers, commissariat servants, camp followers, etc., etc., every one of whom behaved like a gentleman during the scolding I received, while he behaved like a brute. After he was dead, I was told that Barry was a woman. I should say that Barry was the most hardened creature I ever met." But it's a kind of interesting, you know, you just think, well, what if you were transgender back in the day?
But was James transgender?
Or just wanted to be a doctor so much?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We will never know. But it's a very interesting life.
That's extraordinary.
It's an interesting life and an amazing legacy.
God, it must have been really lonely, though. That must have been a massive secret. How many people would have known?
Yeah, I mean, he had sort of manservants. He had a manservant and some dogs. But
see, you're always fine with a dog.
Yeah, exactly. Dogs don't care. Dogs don't care.
Dogs can keep a secret.
But yeah, he died on the 25th of July, 1865, from dysentery. And Sophia Bishop, the charwoman who took care of the body, examined his anatomy and revealed the information after the funeral.
Why did she have to do that?
Yeah, I know.
Stay out of it. Yeah. Really? If I had a corpse, the last thing I'd be doing was going, well, I know what I need to do now. Yeah. I better pull its pants down. God, dead genitals. What the hell? No, thank you.
Oh, she examined the body and said it was a perfect female and that there were marks of him having had a child when very young.
Wow. God, that's an amazing story.
She said, "From marks here, I know I am a woman. I'm a married woman and the mother of 9 children, and I ought to know." Well, I suppose, yes, that would qualify. But, yes. Well,
and I like looking at the genitals of dead people.
Whoever sent in that tale of...
That's brilliant.
...cross-dressing, medical expertise and possible necrophilia at the end. It's a fascinating tale.
Wow. James Barry, not to be confused with J.M. Barry. That's what I always thought you were talking about.
Yeah. Or John Barry.
God.
It's a lot
Barry from Watford.
From Barry from Watford, who has been proved not really to be an old man. Good.
Or a man.
Or
I've seen his dead genitals.
He's not dead, but his genitals are, apparently. That'll be news to him. Marvellous. Right, shall we have a record?
Why not?
To celebrate the life of James Barry.
More gin!
And more gin.
Okay, yes, here we go.
What's this?
Think we'll have Four Non-Blondes What's Up.
Oh, loved. Well, do you know we've had a... Yeah, yes. We had L7 the other week, Four Non-Blondes. We're having all the sort of rad femme 90s.
Yeah.
Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Oh, that was nice to hear, wasn't it? Mm. I could belt along to that. That's Linda Perry from Four Non-Blondes, of course, one of the most successful songwriters in the business.
Yeah, up yours.
Yeah.
Yeah, the right
man,
up there.
Up yours, the man.
Yeah.
She wrote Beautiful by Christina Aguilera. Mm.
Aguilera. Having a
Lella.
Oh, gin's kicking in.
See? Shall we talk about the male contraceptive pill?
Or shall we talk about my bosoms?
And let's combine the two. So in order to stop men jizzing on your tits, Lizzie, like that,
no.
There was
tell me more about this pill.
There was just an article, I found this quite interesting, which was in the Daily Telegraph of all places. A man called Aaron Hamlin, who is the executive director of the Male Contraception Initiative. He cares a lot, and there is no. It's when they say the male pill, that's a slight misnomer. It's not the male pill. It's Vasil gel.
What, you put it on the penis and you hit it with a brick?
Well, it is non-hormonal, so you're halfway there. You there. Vasil gel is a non-hormonal male contraceptive.
It should be called penal gel.
Vasil gel. It sounds a bit like vajazzle, and it's not. Yeah, it's got a anyway. Vasil gel, possibly.
Oh, the vascular deferens.
The vasdurans. Mm-hmm. So what happens is it's a gel that it's a polymer that's injected under local anaesthetic into the man's sperm-carrying tubes accessible through the scrotum.
Wow.
And it blocks sperm, and it's expected to be reversible through a second injection that dissolves the polymer. So it's kind of basically like having a vasectomy, except ultimately very, very reversible.
A very, very, very,
very, very
what for that sort of
or,
when you've just got divorced type feeling.
Well, you know, you don't want to turn it off altogether. I've told you this is my
yes, Dustin, I do. Dustin, I want to turn everyone's off altogether
turn
now.
It off. There's other options. Genderusa. Mm-hmm. They're not. None of these are snappily named.
No,
that's another non-hormonal contraceptive. It's gone through phase two human trials in Indonesia, which, you know, that's it's out there, and the method is hypothesised to work by preventing the sperm's ability to fertilise an egg. Another method, this one from the US, is an anti-epin agent that targets sperm's ability to swim.
Swim?
Sperm's ability to spin.
Oh, I love it when they
try
spin.
And work out what, yeah. Try and work out what I'm trying to say there. And those would be actual pills. That one and the other one would be pills. These contraceptives are the first in line because they have support from clinical trials, but there are many others, including the Clean Sheets pill. Now, this is one that I think I get behind the name.
Tell me more!
The Clean Sheets pill, which is being developed in London. Bloody well done.
Come on,
London. It is designed to allow orgasm while inhibiting ejaculation. That's going to be weird.
Aren't you going to end up with enormous balls?
Well, I mean, I'm not a medical expert, but yes. Yes, you are. You're going to have
enormous
balls. You're going to have a wheelbarrow full of your balls to carry around.
Wow.
But yeah, so loads of...
I love the fact they called it Clean Sheets. That's
clean
so
sheets.
Rude.
The Clean Sheets pill. But because they're all hormone-free...
No more tears.
As well, that's quite... you know, it's obviously because female contraceptives, a lot of them are hormonal and we don't know what the side... Well, we know that some of the side effects are potentially carcinogenic and difficult. So,
but we also know that this is the sort of contraception that's not going to be taken up by 17 and 18 year old boys because they wouldn't remember it, or they'd say, oh, yes, I have done it. This is contraceptive for people in sort of a later period of their life who are actually planning families and stuff and trying to slow down, isn't it? It's not, hey ladies, and we're getting you out of having to take the pill now in your 20s.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, because obviously the number one objection that people always make to a male contraceptive pill is, would you, as a woman, trust someone if they said that they'd taken it? I mean, and yes, you would if you were in a relationship with them, as much as they would trust you, I suppose. But the gel one, that sounds like quite a good, you know, if you've had your
that's
gel
one that
injected.
You. That's but men and needles and willies, I don't think are a very good combination.
Well, yeah, but better than having a vasectomy, because I think it, you know, it sounds like it's not quite as intrusive. But yeah,
but you know, men really love going to the doctor, and they really yes. love having sharp things put in their penises. So yes, I think it's a win-win.
Yeah, that's the one that's going to. I mean, the. There was a sort of reply article in the Telegraph afterwards, which I think also made some, you know, interesting and exciting that, oh, there may be a male contraceptive pill, and wouldn't it be nice if you were in a relationship where you could get the man to take responsibility for contraception? Mm-hmm. But there was another article which was five reasons why the male pill isn't coming anytime soon. The first one is drug companies think it's too risky financially.
What, because they'd get sued if ladies got pregnant?
It's to do with maths.
Oh, maths!
because a marketing plan must be devised to ensure the end product doesn't flop. Even then, it's a gamble, especially when, in the case of the male pill, it can only be used by half the population.
Yeah, but no, there's no method of contraception that's 100%. Even the pill is 99.99999%. None of them are. 100%.
Basically, they're saying that it will take a smaller... If a smaller company takes a risk on it, then the big companies will go in after it, but they're not prepared to put the money that it would cost.
Well, what they need to do then is to combine it with Viagra. So yes. you've got the Lord giveth with one hand and he taketh away with the other. Like, roll up, lads, get a hard on, and it won't upset anyone.
Yes.
I'm a genius.
You are.
Take that, Pfizer.
Or some kind of, you know, baldness cure or something. You know, you think, there is a sort of... Because the next reason why they don't think it will catch on, men aren't demanding it in huge numbers because actually...
They're not interested.
They don't really... it's sort of... They don't really want to speak up about health issues generally. So contraception isn't something that they would demand, whereas we get very cross about why is it always women who have to step up.
I'm very interested because you're flicking through these pages and you keep flicking over, and there's something I can see that,
yes.
that is applicable to what we're talking about. And
now there's a photograph what you're gonna say.
Of a Sinclair C5.
There's a photograph of a Sinclair C5, and the photo has been taken by Roger Taylor. Of right. Queen or Duran Duran.
And he's got an erection while he's taking it?
Here we go. The pharmaceutical companies fear they'll invest time and money into a product which, like the Sinclair C5, will be a massive flop because there's no consumer demand. And then they've shown us the Sinclair C5.
And a massive flop. Oh, Roger!
But the main argument is that actually men are just quite happy with condoms or vasectomies.
Do you hear about this new condom that these kids have invented?
No.
I read about it yesterday. They're coming up to London to receive something at Buckingham Palace. They're school kids. Mm. And they came up with this brilliant idea of condoms that change colour if they're in the presence of venereal disease.
Oh, good. Oh.
Yeah. So I think chlamydia... I can't remember if it was gonorrhea or syphilis, but you know, that's a real dampener on the end of a on the end of a bonk. That was lovely. You've got chlamydia. But it's brilliant.
It's like a lucky dip.
But by then it's kind of too late.
Well, no, but then you know you've done the right thing by using a barrier contraceptive method, surely. You go, oh, it's because it would come out. But then also, how do you know whose it is?
I don't know.
It's
you
like
better,
one
ask,
of you
you better ask the kids how these condoms work.
They don't deserve it. They haven't thought it through. They don't deserve it. Send them back, wherever they're coming from. Buckingham Palace is closed.
Buckingham Palace.
Buckingham Palace. Jen's
kicking in.
But yeah, there's also the argument that, you know, do you really want men to be in charge of your fertility or lack of, or if you're, you know, if you're in a relationship, in the same way that men have always said, oh, what if you're in a relationship with a woman and she says she's taken the pill and she hasn't? Mm. But then men seem to have been quite happy to sort of take that risk for years. But, you know, the argument is, would women be as, not only to trust them to have taken it, but to trust them not to have taken it if you're trying to get pregnant? And he says he wants a baby, but actually he doesn't.
It's complicated, isn't it?
It is a very complicated
You're
business.
Better off being a nun.
You are. Just don't have sex, kids. That's what we're saying. Or do it with a condom that tells you whether or not you've got...
Or just don't be afraid of the big abortion word. I'm fed up with that. Mm. Why can't people just have abortions when a baby comes along? When a fetus comes along?
Well, they do. One in three women does indeed do that thing. So,
yeah, but they never deal with it in soap operas, do they?
Whenever somebody gets pregnant in a soap opera, they never ever have an abortion. It's always taken through to a full term.
Is that true? See, I don't watch enough soap operas. Because I'm
suggested,
astonished.
It's a real like, dirty
word.
I can't believe you just said that.
Oh my God, how dare you?
Yeah. Well, and the problem is, in terms of narrative, it is difficult because abortion obviously doesn't have the same dramatic potential as having a child.
Mm.
So you can sort of see it from a plot point of view where they go, well, it's much more interesting to have a pregnancy than, you know, an abortion, which will then end that pregnancy storyline. And the only way that they can continue that then is if there are repercussions and if the woman is terribly traumatised. Or whereas actually the true story of what happens when women have abortions is they have them and they feel however they feel about it and they just deal with it. But, you know, that doesn't make for great drama, does it?
No.
But it is, you're right, because we never see that. And so women, I think young women do get the impression that abortion is an unthinkable, terrible, traumatic, you know. And it is very difficult because, you know, it's a massive downer to talk about. So positive abortion stories going, look, it's not, you know, it's not ideally what you want to do, but it happens and, you know, many of us have been through it and you do get through it and come out the other side. I mean, you know, it's hard to have that conversation with with young women at bus stops, I found.
they just won't engage, will they?
It is a, but yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Have you seen, talking of films, which I was about an hour and a half ago, there's a film which dealt with the subject recently, which everyone said was very good, and I have forgotten the name, and I'm looking around at you, hopefully.
What was it about? How many words?
Is it a film or a book? So annoy me. I'm going to look it up.
Who's in it? Is there a bloke or a woman?
It was a young American woman who did it. And the Obvious Child, it's called Obvious Child.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has said it's a really good film because it does deal with it in a sort of realistic, normal way. And it's sort of a, you know, it's kind of a pro-choice film, really. And it came out and I really intended to see it and I haven't, but I will watch it this week and then I will share that for Film Club next week. It's on Netflix now. You can watch it without leaving the house. You can do that. So now let's have a little record and then we're going to be back. We're going to be galloping towards the end of the show and I still need to find out a lot more stuff about Lizzie Roper.
I
nearly called you Nikki Roper then.
Well, don't do that.
I don't know why I did
that. That would be stupid. Lucy Proctor.
Yes.
So I think a bit more Grace Jones, the album of the week. Yeah. And Slave to the Rhythm, why not?
Oh, God, that's
amazing. Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
And Lizzie Roper.
Hey, yeah.
FUBAR Radio. Annabelle Knight has just tweeted at me. Us to say that the thing she would most look forward to about being a member of the opposite sex was a pay rise.
Oh,
which is, you know, chimes with what the article that we were referring to. That was one of the things that he said, was that he instantly got paid more when he was away. Luckily, I get paid very little there.
I get paid nothing, just love and licks from bulldogs
and frozen potatoes, and delightful Yorkshire puddings. So now, Lizzie Roper, we are. Shall we reminisce? Because we
share the dressing room. I've seen your nunny.
Oh, you have. Yeah. On so many occasions. It was like we never put it away. Yeah, because we worked together in a West End play 11 years ago.
No.
I know, it's a long time ago.
C'est pas possible.
C'est absolument possible because nous sommes très vieilles.
Très vieilles.
But yes, and that was a fascinating time to be alive. we did a production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in the West End with Christian Slater as McMurphy.
Lovely Christian Slater.
And a load of stand-up comedians. And it was, there was four women.
Four, you, me, Frances Barber, Catherine Jakeways.
Yes.
It was happy times, wasn't it?
It was an amazing, amazing, amazing time.
Yeah.
Yes, because that play, it's sort of interesting. Over the years, I have kind of thought, gosh, it is such an interesting play. And nobody really at that point, nobody really went, oh, it's actually quite a sort of misogynist play.
No.
Which I think they kind of would No, I mean, I think it's been raised at
I think it's getting harder and harder to do it, isn't it? But I think because that because the film was Jack Nicholson, and Jack Nicholson was so sexy and gorgeous and fabulous, and, and there are some great laughs in it, so we can just sort of kick under the carpet the uncomfortable sexism in it.
Yeah. Although, actually, that was the thing about doing a live production of it, was you sort of thought, actually, Frances Barber, who is unbelievable. It's a... When you see really amazing actors, and I kind of, I had like about three lines. I was basically just sat on the stage watching. It was a lovely job for me.
She had a lovely costume, a tiny nurse.
I had a tiny nurse's costume and I sat there. I sat on stage quite a lot and it was really interesting because I did just get to basically watch the play every night and see the power of someone like that who is just an incredible stage actor. And a brilliant telly and film actor as well. But because she is also like the... the thing that we were talking about earlier about as you get older and, you know, being a woman in showbiz or just being a woman generally and it's, you know, things change. And she has never kind of... I mean, she's always been amazing in every phase and era of her
incredibly life. Sexy. As somebody who's always been in control of a sexual power.
And that was what I think with Nurse Ratched that she actually brought to it. Because it is a, you know, I mean, she's the... She represents the system and she's like, you know, basically she's like McMurphy's mum and the sort of castrating, kind of the castrating woman. And but she played it so incredibly powerfully that you did despise her and love her. And it was, you know, a brilliantly sort of...
And sympathise with her.
Yeah. It was a sort of brilliantly interesting
But it's course. Also got, it's also incredibly racist, that play, as well. It is. It's horrific racism.
Well, especially the way we did it with an Irishman dressed up as a Native American. That was, you know, I mean, we got away with that again. You think if we did that today, I'm not sure. Even in the 11 years intervening, I think things have kind of moved on a little bit. And he was amazing, don't get me wrong. But yes, it was interesting times. But who would you, you know, of all the roles that there are to play, I mean, I will nominate some of my, because I went to see Vanessa Redgrave in Driving Miss Daisy. And that was, it was sort of, yeah, they're kind of interesting when you sort of you think there aren't that many roles for older women in like the you know big roles in the West End. There was The Graduate. Did you ever see that with any of the many? I think I saw the Jerry Hall.
No, I want to do. I want to do. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Do you?
Yeah, I want to be Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah, I saw. Who did I see in that? Kathleen Turner.
Yes, I went to see that. Yeah, that was great.
It was. She was fantastic. But I think you could. You've got a bit of a Liz Taylor kind of vibe, actually.
Yeah, you know, I grew up with my mother. I've got that character totally deep down inside me, just waiting to spring out.
Yeah, I mean, I have no ambition to act really, but I do. I like to always speculate about the kind of parts I'd like to do. What about Shakespeare? Any?
I can't stand Shakespeare. So bloody boring. Just awful. The comedies aren't that funny, and the histories are that dull.
I like some of the comedies.
Really?
I've been to see like Midsummer Night's Dream on a lovely night in the Regent's Park.
That's always nice.
That's always fun.
But really, how many more times do we need to see a Midsummer Night's Dream? I was talking to this poor 16-year-old girl the other day, and she's doing Romeo and Juliet for GCSE. She's like, oh God, really? Oh, you poor thing.
It is also that you know, young actor giving their Hamlet or their whoever, or you know, it's you do feel like I wish we could.
I'm a Philistine, but I would rather wrap myself around a Neil Simon. That kind of that kind of dialogue.
I love an Aikbourne. You know, I'll always
love a bit of Aikbourne.
I went to see Miles Jupp. A friend.
Oh, Absurd Person Ding Dong.
In Rules for Living.
Oh, Rules for Living, yeah.
At the National Theatre. And that was a wonderful play. And there was a brilliant older actress in that whose name I've forgotten.
Marcia Warren?
No, Marcia Warren, who is brilliant. It wasn't her, it was... I'm talking about yourselves.
So I bet me over the battle and all.
She was so amazing because she is the sort of, she's like this, it's a very middle class kind of scenario, this play. So the premise of it is that it is a family going home for Christmas, two boys and their mum and dad, and the dad's ill, and the mother is a really neurotic, highly strung, middle class woman trying to keep it all together. And it was the best performance. I cannot impress upon you. And I think it's finished now, but it will be.
It's over.
But yeah, Stephen Mangan was very good in it. But the Deborah Finley,
Oh, God, yeah, she's wonderful.
She was unbelievably good and just really furious. An absolute, yes, a triumph. So what else are you going to be up to in the coming weeks, months, years?
I don't know.
You don't know. Well, you know.
Just want to see what... I've been going out for a couple of musicals lately.
Have you now?
Yes. I like a musical.
I don't.
Come on!
Have
you seen Book of Mormon?
No, I haven't seen Book of Mormon. I haven't seen Matilda.
Oh, well, you know nothing.
No, I know. I think I am gradually coming around to them, but it's only through, yeah, Justin's kind of guidance that I've got, you know, I don't know. I liked London Road.
That, to me, is as near
as it comes to...
these people who say I don't like musicals.
Oh, God, I went to see The Lion King and that was the longest.
Well, that's not a musical.
That's a children's show, isn't it, really?
Concert spectacular for children.
Oh, dear.
And children will eat their own poo, for God's sake. They know nothing.
We did go and see, and I will not name it because I would not wish to, you know... to make any fellow professionals feel uncomfortable, but we went to see a children's show that is the worst. It's the worst experience I've ever had, and I was sat next to this guy who, and he was on his phone the entire time, which I normally think is incredibly rude.
Yeah,
like, it's just not, you know, it's not on in the theatre, but actually within about half an hour I was like, I'm itching to just play, you know. I've been doing what I'm doing on my phone at the moment is I'm doing the driving test, theory test.
Are you learning to drive?
No, I've driven since I was 17. I downloaded it because my son has become obsessed with road signs.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we drive past a road sign, he's like, Mummy, what's that sign? What's that sign? And I just went, oh, let's sort it. I'll just get you there. So he now, with me, does the road theory test.
Oh, bless. How old is he?
He's three.
God.
He's three. I'm not saying he's precocious, but I think... Mm-hmm. He is the new Lewis Hamilton or whatever.
Shame you can't see over a steering wheel, but apart from that...
Well, neither can I. I don't let that hold me back. But, yeah, and I, yeah, I was like, oh, God, it is hard work. This is the... I mean, I love theatre, and I want to do... See, I want to do more writing, and I've just written my second play, and I want to write a play with Lizzie Roper in it.
Yes, please. I'm game.
That's my main purpose for the next...
Could you write a really sort of bitchy, mildly aggressive... slightly sanguine, who can get drunk on one tin of gin.
Do you think you'd be able to play that? I think it's too much of a stretch for you, Roper. They'll never believe it. And there will be a scene where you have to shave your pudendum. And then...
Oh, God.
Someone wearing a mask of the celebrity who may not be named.
Will come all right, all right, it was Simon Cowell.
Can I tell my favourite story from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Which yes, is, please.
Can I tell the Clitty Roulette story, or is that... That is just my favourite thing of the... So, in the course of doing a West End run of a show... As a cast, you can tend to need things to liven it up, like a long marriage.
Well, especially on a Thursday matinee.
You need to spice it up, yeah. And so we bought a wirelessly remote controlled vibrating device. and certain of the cast...
Well, the deal was, Dave Johns bought it, and he had the idea that one of the girls would have to wear it. You'd have to go on stage wearing it. And then a member of the cast would have the button that sets it off. And if you were wearing it, you had to guess who had the button. Which I said, that's a brilliant idea. And we went back. And then Lucy refused.
Yeah.
Catherine refused. Frances Barber refused. And me said, yeah, I'll do it! Brilliant! And it was only when I was standing in the wings about to go on and I had this thing down my pants. And this thing went off and it was of such violent proportions that you were practically doing a dance and it's coming out. And then I got really, really panicky and I had to go on stage with this thing just going...
It was pants. Like an electric whisk. Mm. It was unbelievable. And
how
the front row did not hear. But then, as you know, in order to avoid accusations of sexism, Dave Johns did go on with it in his costume at one point.
Christian Slater went on with a proper vibrator in his pants.
Yeah.
Oh, we were terrible.
Oh, the fun to be had. So next time you go and see... I like to think that Vanessa Redgrave, when she was in Driving Miss Daisy, was doing the same way James Earl Jones just had.
Yeah. That's not Parkinson's.
Driving Miss Daisy's Janet. Good. Now, I think... We are, yeah, we are kind of, we're crashing towards the end of the show, Ms. Roper.
I know. But I've had so much fun and gin.
Well, would you come back? Because the other thing that I wanted to mention just before we go, before we run out of time, is that you are to be seen on the Alan Davis Untitled show.
Yeah.
And
would you have to look up on the internet now?
I do have to look it up on the internet.
What? Yeah. It's been and gone.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I was. This was my big thing that I was building to. Was, oh, yeah, and then at the end we can plug this thing. That
you're like bad it. Sex.
Oh, I'm the worst sex.
I did it months ago.
Oh, did it go well?
Yeah, I was brilliant.
It's nothing like a good retrospective plug for something that's already been.
But if you look online for Alan Davis, The Pig Knows You're Frightened, you'll find one of the best programmes of your life.
The Pig Knows You're Frightened. Okay. Because again, something else that I would like to do with you is get you back doing improv on telly on a more regular basis. Did you see the there's been a Whose Line Is It Anyway live show that everyone's raving about and saying,
really?
Why isn't there an improv on telly?
Really? Where is it?
It's on in the West End at the Vaudeville, maybe? Or
yeah,
it's somewhere.
I've seen posters for it. It's somewhere
it's like not the that, people yeah. who do on the play that goes wrong.
No, this is the proper old the old.
Oh yes, I've seen the posters. Josie Lawrence is doing it, and Clive Anderson
and
all that.
Proops, I think, is
yeah, well, they're top of their game, aren't they? They're amazing. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I do find, watching improv, I find it really, really uncomfortable. Unless you've got people who are, because so many people go, oh, well, yeah. And I just feel like it's like watching adults
there's nothing.
Play.
Amateur improv is a hard watch. Yes, that is. Give us a suggestion. Something else. That's how I would be if I was doing. I'd be like, just if you can only suggest the three things that I've got.
If improv was a baby in a cradle, I would pick a brick up and smash it in its face.
Well, do you know what? I will cross that off my list of projects for Lizzie Roper. It's good that we had this little chat, isn't it? It's a good job that we decided. That really is. What a lovely thing to end our lovely
ending.
It's been so nice.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Thanks.
It's been, well, I will always carry the image of your shaven, swollen, sore.
And me,
genitals.
You.
And it's been an absolute pleasure. As
Thank
I knew
you
it
for
would
having
be.
Me. I can only apologise.
Next week, we'll be back. I don't know who we've got or how.
Sally Hughes.
Oh, lovely. Oh, marvellous. Oh, well, there we go. So we can, yes, there's a lot of amazing things that she's done. She's very successful.
Yeah, and she's got stuff on the horizon, isn't she?
She's done stuff that's not just been on.
Yeah.
She's got stuff coming up.
Yeah.
That will be a delight. So we'll see you guys between 6 and 8 next week. Thanks, Lizzie.
Sorry.
Thanks, Amanda.
Sorry.